The recovery plan proposed by Business for South Africa will require 3.4 trillion rand in funding over the next 3 years, which could push public sector debt to over 6.4 trillion rand during the period. The Vice President of Business for South Africa, Martin Kingston, told a media conference that the country has reached a fork in the road and that the actions taken by leaders in the immediate future will set the country on one of two paths, the low road that could lead to a failed state or the high road, which would mean a commitment to decisive leadership and bold actions that would take unavoidable, difficult decisions.
We believe that the crisis presents an opportunity for us as society to rethink the future of the country. To do that, we need to move from the metrics that we have seen in 2020 to ambitious targets some 10 years out, and we can only do that if we work together as social partners in building the economy and tackling poverty, inequality, and unemployment that has been massively exacerbated by COVID-19. To do that, we need a compelling and a stable environment which will attract investment, and that will drive both growth and employment. And we believe that in that context, the restoration of both consumer and business confidence is absolutely critical if we're going to accelerate growth in the economy and both protect and add jobs. And we believe that the business community has got a critical role to play in working alongside social partners in accessing and mobilizing capital, both domestically and internationally, implementing what we characterize as national projects and growing the tax base to strengthen the fiscus. Most importantly, we need to build a bridge to recovery beyond COVID-19, recognizing that it's likely to be with us for the foreseeable future. And certainly in our calculations, we've anticipated the balance of 2020 and 2021. And to do that, we need an ambiguous and a compelling narrative, which is focused on inclusive growth and investment, to actually mobilize the capital that I have referred to. In doing that, we need to work together, and the theme of our approach is indeed that it is in partnership with government, with labor, and with civil society. If we're going to tackle the constraints and the challenges that have confronted us historically, that we've been unable to deal with, and if we're going to be able to deliver inclusive and accelerated economic, we have identified those key factors that we believe are necessary if we're going to be able to put in place that recovery strategy. From a new social and economic compact focused on inclusive growth through infrastructure investment, unlocking sector opportunities, recognizing that we are now operating in a new global paradigm. Every single one of our trading and investment partners is also beset with the challenges of COVID-19. We identify those issues that we have failed comprehensively to address over the past 25 years, be it policy certainty, the capacity of the state, addressing the issues of inequality, transformation, and broad-based black economic empowerment, dealing with inefficient and redundant state-owned enterprises, ensuring that our education outcomes enable innovation and entrepreneurship to come to the fore, and decisively addressing the issue of corruption and crime. And to drive change, we believe that we need to massively increase the ease of doing business, as well as driving up through the competitiveness rankings globally. We need to accelerate economic transformation, particularly sustainable, broad-based black economic empowerment and gender equality. We need to mobilize the full might of small and medium-sized enterprises, agree on national projects, as I said, and ensure that there is effective and timely implementation of all of these initiatives via appropriately capacitated resources drawn from society at large. And at all times, we need to maintain fiscal discipline, which is key to reducing the cost of capital and the terms and conditions on which we can access that capital. I believe that we are all familiar with the impact of COVID-19 on both lives and livelihoods. The 30% decline that we've seen in GDP in Q2 alone. We estimate 1 million jobs have already been lost in the formal economy, as many in the informal economy, and that we have one opportunity, and it is now, it is the silver lining, to be able to work together with decisive leadership to urgently deliver on those promises that have been made but not seen through in the years gone by, and to build a better country for all of us with a shared national vision which can focus on both inclusive growth and on job creation. The impact of the lockdown during Q2 in a number of key sectors of the economy, and the fact that recovery is going to take time and off a much lower base. In fact, we estimate that it's going to take approximately 3 years for us to recover to the pre-COVID levels of real GDP. If we do not implement the changes that we are talking to, indeed, it will take even longer than that. We estimate 5 years or beyond. We are effectively in the last chance saloon. We've set out here key metrics that we believe not only investors, but rating agencies, the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, and indeed many of us commentators apply in assessing the health of the South African economy. From the size of the economy, our debt to GDP ratio, our credit rating, through to the amount of foreign direct investment, the tax revenue that's been mobilizing, the exchange rate, and most importantly, the levels of unemployment. Here on this slide, of course, we demonstrate the narrow unemployment and the Gini coefficient. And what we've seen is that despite the progress that we made in the early years as we emerged post-democracy in 1994, the years of stagnation from 2008 to 19 when we stumbled, and then, of course, COVID-19, which has effectively unraveled much of the progress we had made over the past 25 years. And where all of the metrics concerned have declined radically. And we now need to arrest that decline and embrace a much more accelerated growth path, which, as we say here, will require strategic choices and courageous and bold leadership. There are three metrics that we have used on this following slide, which demonstrate that to mobilize the capital that is required to fund all of these issues, and to be able to encourage the levels of confidence that are required both for consumers and for investors, we need to deal with the total factor productivity, which has declined, as we can see, consistently and progressively over the past 20 years. The factors that have been identified by the World Bank in the ease of doing business and by the World Economic Forum in their Global Competitiveness Report. As SIPO has indicated, broad-based black economic empowerment is absolutely central to our proposition. We are of the view that the legislation and regulations that have been put in place to date has not delivered on the transformational intent of empowerment. And this represents not only an opportunity, but a fundamental necessity for us to address that by ensuring that we can implement a transformation culture in business, ensure that we simplify policy and ensure that it is aligned and consistent wherever possible, and in particular, that it is an enabler rather than a constraint on advancing the interests of small and medium-sized enterprises, many of whom have been disadvantaged to date by the policies in place because they've not been applied appropriately and comprehensively. And that in this context, we ensure the full and equitable participation by a broad base of previously disadvantaged South Africans in all aspects of the society, with a particular emphasis on those that are most disadvantaged, as we said here, women, the youth, disabled, the rural, and the poor. And that we need to ensure that we implement a substance over form approach, focusing on interventions to build social cohesion and ensure a transformation culture within business and indeed across society. We believe that the crisis actually presents us with specific opportunities which we can take advantage of. First and foremost, as we've indicated, a new social and economic compact that is focused on inclusive growth and where we can build on the momentum and the cooperation that's been established during the current crisis. Having launched the infrastructure symposium, that we now accelerate the implementation of infrastructure that we recognize is a cornerstone of economic activity and the prospect for sustainable growth. that we unlock opportunities across sectors, take advantage of the digital economy, and acknowledge the new global paradigm I referred to at the outset. But we need to be honest about the constraints that have faced us to date and the challenges to such growth, including, and I'll highlight some, the incapacity of the state, failing to deal comprehensively with corruption and crime, ensuring that we have fit-for-purpose state-owned enterprises, and those that are not, we take off the government balance sheet, that we have policy certainty, not only with respect to BEE, but with respect to all other aspects of policy, and that critically we focus on education outcomes and putting in place a health and wellness system which can support society in a way that is manifestly not capable of doing currently. We think that all stakeholders, and business is a critical stakeholder in this equation, need to partner across key areas. I'm just going to highlight the iterative steps that we have identified on this. First is focusing on key sectors and enablers for recovery that have a disproportionate impact, that we develop and implement strategies to scale. We revisit, as I said, policy and regulatory inhibitors, ensure that we can leverage off the scope for trade and exports, particularly to the balance of the continent, that we align with government on the new role of state organs and state-owned enterprises, as well as with labor on a conducive regulatory environment. And we recognize that all of us have a role to play, particularly the state, providing overall guidance on the economic trajectory for the country and an enabling environment in the context of policy certainty and consistency, and business in sourcing capital domestically and internationally, investing in projects and creating sustainable and broadly based jobs across the country. It is only by doing this that we are of the view that we can ensure shared prosperity for the country at large, addressing poverty, inequality, and unemployment. So with that in mind, we assembled a team of industry experts. There was broad participation across all of these sectors, from business nationally and locally, small and large, but led by sector specialists in all cases, focusing, as I've indicated, on those sectors and projects that had the strongest possible multiplier effect on both jobs and growth, whilst at the same time identifying the challenges that would constrain or inhibit both investment and actions that were necessary to accelerate that growth and job creation. Acknowledging at the same time that funding key projects would be critical given the limited capital that is available, that I will refer to in due course, and the reduced levels of foreign investment support. Acknowledging, as I said, that many of our trading and investment partners are now consumed with their own COVID-19 related health, economic and societal challenges. So we looked at every industry sector and high impact industry focused areas, particularly those with strong multipliers that could be quickly scaled. We looked at the current impact for each and every one of these focus areas. There are 11 that we've highlighted. And then the growth potential, particularly in terms of their impact on the market, on exports, GDP, employment and structural benefit. And those impact industry focus areas covered SMMEs, which are clearly multi-sectoral, as well as wholesale and retail, equally so multi-sectoral. And then 9 others from energy and water and mining, the resources areas, through industrial to services and support, agriculture, financial services, through to telecommunications, tourism and leisure. Each and every one of these has got detailed plans in terms of the constraints and challenges, the opportunities and the resources that need to be mobilized, as well as cross-cutting themes, policies and issues that need to be holistically addressed. So in that context, for each sector, as I said, we looked at the objectives, short, medium and long term, the key challenges, the priority actions, and we have designed a roadmap and plan for each of those sectors, leveraging off work that has already been performed. Business for South Africa is clearly committed to a view that there is no point or purpose in replication or duplication. So, as I said, harnessing activities that have taken place In particular, the work that has been performed since the Job Summit, which looked at critical enablers and activators of employment, acknowledging that the work that we have been doing as a social partner on the Job Summit needed to be realigned in the context of COVID-19. And then looking at a number of other initiatives, policies and plans that have emerged over the past 10 and 15 years from the National Development Plan through to most recently the Supplementary Budget Review. And in all cases, for each sector, but across sectors, identifying priorities that are cross-cutting from policy consistency and regulatory reform through to the issue of crime and corruption, the network industries, optimizing state-owned enterprises, through to economic transformation and broad-based black economic empowerment, and modernization of the economy. In that context, we recognize that despite the fact that multiple priorities have been identified for each sector and for each cross-cutting theme and issue, we needed to limit them and we needed to ruthlessly prioritize, and we would advocate the same will apply to our social partners and the collectivity of us as we try and address and implement some of these proposals. We have 12 so-called projects and initiatives across the network industries, energy, security, and the just transition through transport and logistics and ICT. The agricultural sector, enhanced localization and access to finance on an inclusive and lowest cost of capital basis. At the same time, as on the right-hand side, identifying policy focus areas where we needed both certainty and they can contribute to inclusive growth. Many of these I've already mentioned, but I would highlight the mobilization of large-scale infrastructure projects, clarity on land reform, addressing the issues of education and skills development, ensuring that the labor relations environment is appropriate. That doesn't mean reform in an aggressive way. It means aligning it to our current circumstances and then looking at simplification of regulation wherever possible. We recognized that much of this work is time consuming and the results will only emerge in the medium term. And we don't have the ability to do that. We need to create an immediate uplift in the levels of consumer and business confidence. So at the same time, we identified those actions that we believe can be taken immediately and which require no policy changes. There are 15 listed. Again, I'd just like to highlight a few. The first is the need for a zero-based reconstruction budget, which we will see being tabled in mid-October in the context of the medium-term budget policy statement. And we believe that is the window of opportunity that is available to us in South Africa to demonstrate these changes, to ensure that we have implemented a new social compact and we can demonstrate in the spirit of solidarity that we can work together with social partners in ensuring that there are not just decisions, but aggressive and effective implementation. The second is with respect to SMMEs, ensuring that they're paid, that they have access to finance, and that we can mobilize immediately the requisite mentorship and support programs, that we can revitalize the South African construction industry, in particular in the context of sustainable development of infrastructure, that we increasingly localize, particularly in the context of COVID-19, and there is therefore now a program that has been launched under our auspices to look at localization across all sectors, that we can maximize the terms on which finance is available through public-private partnerships. We can complete the spectrum auction and re-energize digital migration. And in all of these cases, that we capacitate accordingly from across a society, drawing on resources, experience, and expertise within not only the public and private sector, but our social partners more broadly. The biggest single constraint that we find, of course, is the current economic prospect and fiscal constraints under which we are operating. We already entered the crisis with a recession at our back, exaggerated by the downgrades to sub-investment grade, and COVID-19 has significantly amplified, as we've indicated here, the outlook for GDP. CIPO indicated that we think that it will be between 8.8 and 10% contraction for 2020 alone, as well as higher budget deficits and debt to GDP levels. We estimate the aggregate funding for the public and private sector, in other words, for South Africa, will be some 3.4 trillion rand over the next 3 years, of which 2.4 trillion, including SOEs, is in the public sector. And the current and traditional sources of funding, including from within South Africa, is inadequate to be able to provide the support that we require. And in that context, we're going to have to access alternative and other sources of capital in competition with other emerging markets confronted with exactly the same challenges as ourselves. And that if we're going to implement infrastructure projects that are clearly a cornerstone of economic activity, as I said, then we're going to have to demonstrate fiscal discipline, regulatory certainty, and market stability. And what we cannot do is carry on along the current trajectory of unsustainable government finances with a cost of capital which would render all of these projects unviable and unsustainable. And we can only access this capital by working collaboratively with public and private sector, but also with our other social partners. So in our modeling, and our model is in fact almost identical to the National Treasury model and the Reserve Bank model, we have gone into detailed comparisons with them. As I indicated, we have an expected contraction of about 10% for the current fiscal year, growing off that lower base by approximately 4% in the subsequent 2 or 3 years. And that in itself is based upon some very aggressive assumptions that we have zero-based budgeting, that most expenditure items grow at a slower level than inflation, that there is indeed a constant reduction in the real wage bill for government over the entire period, and that there's a reduction in the funding requirement both of local government and SOEs with enhanced efficiencies in the public sector at all levels from local government through SOEs to national government. Slide, we indicate the 2.4 trillion of national funding requirements you'll see in 2022-2023, but we're only going to be able to recover, as I said at the outset, to pre-COVID levels of real GDP within 3 years if we take all of these steps, failing which we think it could be 5 years or beyond, and major warning signs are already in place in terms of the size of the budget deficit remaining above 13%, and debt continuing to accelerate to levels where it is actually incapable of being serviced, as Minister Mboweni said, then we will have a true financial and debt crisis. We are of the view that as a country, we need to work together now to ensure this accelerated economic recovery and shared national vision. We've wasted an enormous amount of both time and resources over the last decade. I'm sure many of you will say that we've identified issues that have been long identified. The problem is that almost none of them have been comprehensively and decisively, let alone effectively, addressed. And we need to work in all areas on ensuring that we operate in the national interest, not just in narrow, specific interest areas. To do that, we need bold and courageous leadership. And we need to capacitate the requisite teams and supports that SIPO was referring to at the outset, combining both public and private sector expertise, and we've indicated to our social partners at NEDLAC, as well as directly to government and to labor, that is exactly what we are intending and proposing that we should do. We have suggested that in the current circumstances, we have one last opportunity if we're going to be able to achieve our potential in the foreseeable future. That is that we focus on key areas in terms of sectors, policies, funding options, and stabilizing the fiscus. And to do that, that we harmonize and integrate various processes that are working within the country already under the auspices of an economic reconstruction, growth, and inclusivity plan, which we would suggest be overseen by the president himself, and that we would support it in ensuring that we can, as quickly as possible, mobilize the requisite resources, as I indicated in the window that's available to us before the medium-term budget policy statement, to enhance the levels of both consumer and investor confidence that's required and demonstrate that as social partners, we can actually achieve a new inclusive economic future for the country.
Business for South Africa acknowledged that the structural reforms that they are suggesting have been on the agenda for a while, and they were asked why they are confident that their proposals will be acted on by the government now. The Chief Executive Officer of Business for South Africa, Cas Kovadia, said they are aware that the issues have been raised before and have not been dealt with.
I think we are absolutely cognizant of the fact that a lot of what is in the document is not new. And the reality is that it's not new because the issues we raise in the document are fundamental issues that have not been dealt with in many ways in the last few years, so the issues remain the same. I think what has changed in some ways, COVID-19, the pandemic, tragic as it has been, has essentially created a situation where, while pre-COVID we might have been at some sort of a crossroads where we had a number of choices, COVID has, within the context of the same issues, now created a situation where we're at a T-junction and we have one of two choices to make. The wrong choice takes us in towards a failed state. The correct choice puts us onto a long, hard road to economic recovery, to which we all need to contribute and to which we all need to show brave and consistent and mature leadership, every constituency in this country. And I think that's the difference. The difference is that we are no longer at the precipice. We've, to a certain extent, jumped, and we now need to begin to apply these things with urgency to open up some parachutes so that we have a softer landing than we would otherwise have had. And I think that's the difference. And so we recognize that there's nothing new here, but there isn't meant to be anything new here. I think we need to emphasize that these are issues that should have been addressed a long time ago. We now don't have any more choices, and we need to now get together to address them.
Mr. Kenton said they did not agree with the discussion document on economic growth after COVID-19 that has been put forward by the ANC today, which targets pension funds.
There are many aspects of it that also focus on common themes, including a new forged social and economic compact, including infrastructure-led recovery. We do not support a change to Regulation 28. We've made that clear in the context of the suggestions, both with respect to Eskom and elsewhere. We believe that it compromises the fiduciary responsibilities and the mandates of trustees and pension funds. We think that it impairs the risk-adjusted return to those pension funds. What we have said is that we support the mobilization of capital from any source, provided that we don't in any way undermine the financial stability of South Africa, of which perhaps we are very proud. The same applies to the SARB making resources available to DFIs. We don't support that. We are absolutely aligned with the position that has been articulated by the governor of the South African Reserve Bank as to its remit and its scope of responsibility.
This is Linda von Tolberg for BizNews.